Again, good morning, everybody. Glad to have you with us today. This is my friend, Jason Noble. Everybody say, hi, Jason. And hey, Jason's everybody. A great, great guy, Dr. Jason Noble, married to Dr. Erica Noble. They have four children, and Jason's no stranger to most of us here at First Colony. He and Erica spent a lot of their growing up years right here. We'll claim them both. And they've got a lot of family right here. But since, and Jason was on our staff for several years, serving as one of our student ministers. And since 2006, Jason has been the preaching minister for the, and I love the name of this church, the Friendly Avenue Church of Christ in Greensboro, North Carolina. Does that sound lush and welcoming or what? The Friendly Avenue Church in Greensboro, North Carolina. Jacob, Jason, welcome back to First Colony. And today, Jason's going to lead us in a message where we talk about digital disciples following Jesus in a social, mobile, and digital age. And so, Jason, let's get right into it. We got a lot of things to talk about today. Yes, and let me just start by just saying kind of the obvious here. We live in a world, in a culture where there's a mixture and a meshing of the material and the virtual. And it impacts us. It's something that is, as believers, as we want to follow Christ in a very consistent way, it impacts us. So it's kind of give a beginning thought process for us as we see how the virtual world impacts believers as we live in this dual existence.
Well, absolutely. And Ronnie, let me just say first, thank you so much for the chance and the opportunity to continue to be a part of the life and ministry of the First Colony Church of Christ. Many years of blessing and memories and formation have been shared with me, and it's a privilege and an honor to share back with the church family here what God's been doing in my life out in North Carolina. And I mean, it's true, isn't it? We seem to weave in and out all the more into this, from this physical, material world in which we live, the one we can touch it, we can smell it. This is the world we live in. And then almost whenever we desire, we can leave that and go into this neighborhood over here that's this, it's a virtual world. We can't touch it, we can't smell it, but it is so real. And over the past year and a half, I've been burdened with the implications of what that means for us as followers of Jesus, seeing mainly that world over there, that virtual world, at one time we debated, is it real? And I've decided in my own life, it is a real world, Ronnie. That world out there impacts our material existence in significant ways. And I've seen it in my church. And maybe you've seen it probably too, and we could each have our own list of examples of how we interact in this world impacts the material world, whether that's in good ways, noble ways, honorable ways, and some in very challenging and difficult ways. I know we had, you know, whether it's law enforcement showing up to somebody's house unannounced to whisk somebody away because of what they were doing in this virtual world, or whether it's a young lady meeting somebody in the we universe, her me met a me in the we universe, and they connected. Well, he's an older guy in Texas, and they're about to meet up. Well, we begin to realize, wait a minute, what's going on over here is impacting life here. I know in our church, we went, I don't know if it happened here, but in North Carolina in 2016, we went through the first fully operational presidential election on social media. And one of my members told me, Jason, this was just a horrible experience. Church members who would come to church, brothers and sisters who would come to encourage each other, to lift each other up, to praise God together, would leave that physical world and then go into this virtual world and begin to become one another's accusers. And so all of that just to say, it is upon us to think about how we live in these different worlds and the impact that it's having on our lives.
Yes, I suppose one of the dangers of the internet is that we can have almost two different realities. and it can feed, you know, obviously with a sinful nature, it feeds that desire, that possibility in us to be very, very inconsistent. None of us will ever be perfectly consistent, but for there to be a gap between what we believe and what we aspire to be and how we behave maybe in a virtual world.
Yeah, and you see that frequently, where you'll have this, in this virtual world in which we live, we may begin to believe, you know, out there in the virtual world, it's not a real world, there are no consequences, I can do whatever I want. Well, we know that's not true. Or, you know, in this virtual world, nobody knows who I am. Well, we know that anonymous is really a myth. Or in that virtual world, I can delete things. So there's no record. Well, we know, if we're paying attention, that deleting and clearing and all that, it doesn't really work. I don't know if you, did you by chance, you know, when WikiLeaks published the Clinton emails that were deleted, did you go check them out?
I did not.
You didn't? Oh, well, you were missing out. I went through and I went to WikiLeaks and read all the deleted emails. And, you know, you can search those. I searched them for my name.
Were you there?
They weren't talking about me, so I was all right. But as I was doing that, I was thinking, you know, what am I doing? What am I doing? Reading somebody else's mail. I mean, in the material world, if somebody gave me your mail, I wouldn't read through it. That's not my mail. But for some reason, out in this virtual world, we feel like maybe the rules have changed or we can behave differently. And Jesus always called his disciples to congruence and consistency in their lives. Whether it's the virtual world, whether you're here at church, you're at school, you're at the office, that you are who you are as a follower of Jesus. Hebrews says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And that just means he's himself. And that's the way followers of Jesus live their lives.
As opposed to the compartments. You know, I think of the passage out of James chapter 3. With the tongue, we praise our Lord and Father, and with it, we curse human beings who've been made in the very likeness of God. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. Mm-hmm. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? Obviously, they can't. My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water.
That's right.
And the point there being?
Yeah, consistency in our lives. We can't come in here and praise God together with our mouths and then go into a different world and become each other's accusers before God. There is this sense of identity and being. I mean, bottom line is this. If you're looking for a set of guidelines of how should I behave in this virtual world, you don't have to look any further than the instructions Jesus gave his disciples on how we behave and who we are to be in the material world. That those transpose upon one another and they inform each other.
Sean Parker, former Facebook president, expressed some fears over what the social network is doing to our children's brains. He said that it can be addictive. It becomes a social validation feedback loop that exploits weaknesses in the human psyche. So how much should we, you know, pay attention to comments like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's the burden that maybe every parent or grandparent who loves a child is feeling. How do I raise a child in this digital social age? And Mr. Parker, former Facebook president, you don't know if he's trying to just get back at Facebook, maybe they had a falling out, or is he an insider who knows things? He's seen things. I mean, what he's telling us is that we designed this to exploit your natural tendency to be addicted. And you kind of wonder if 100 years from now we're not going to be suing big technology for marketing to our children products they knew would be addictive and bring about some challenges in their lives. And it's not just insiders. data, researchers publishing consistently, looking at children and their lives. For example, a book just recently published, Glow Kids. I don't know if you're familiar with that book, but just presenting some data. How screen addiction is hijacking our kids, and what can we do about it? You know, if you fall asleep dreaming about your video game, you need to wake up. We may need to pay attention to what Mr. Parker is telling us. You know, he won't allow his children to run in that neighborhood. To him, that virtual neighborhood, that virtual world is too dangerous of a place. He will not let his own children run around in that neighborhood.
Say that one more time. Sean Parker, remind everybody who he is and what you said about his own.
Well, he's just a former Facebook executive, kind of made some headway here recently with some comments he made. He has removed himself from the virtual world and does not allow his own children to run around in that world. That neighborhood to him is too dangerous of a place for his own children. Insider speaking out, I don't know. I think we do and we should pay attention to the realities that befall upon us as we figure out how we interact with this world. There are just risks that we should pay attention to.
And so as believers, obviously in everything, we want to be wise and discerning to be able to harness technology in a wonderful way, but also to be aware of some inherent dangers. You know, what is it the Bible tells us about Satan himself? 1 Peter 5, be alert and of a sober mind, because your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not like we're going out in the field of life, taking the field and lining up and look across the field and there's nobody there. It's not like the world is a neutral playing field.
Right.
There is an enemy who is sneaking around looking for somebody whose mind is not clear, who's fragile, so that they can be taken down. And so we live with this sobriety in our minds. I mean, sobriety meaning that we're self-possessed. We have a clear mind. We have an understanding and are self-controlled in our behavior and in our thinking.
So how would you advise a follower of Jesus, and how would you advise a Christian parent to live in such a world without being deceived and duped and for their family to be taken advantage of?
Well, and that is the risk and some of the fear we have. I don't like being exploited. I bristle and I feel terrible when I find out somebody's maybe taking advantage of me. And we live in a world, this virtual world, where there seem to be opportunities that abound for deception, for gaslighting, for different types of discernment. So I think what I would say is nothing more than what Jesus said a long time ago. He said, I'm sending you out into the world like sheep amongst the wolves. Therefore, be as innocent as doves and as shrewd as snakes. And the idea of shrewdness, that's a weird term to me. I don't know. Do you know the difference between a shrew and a shrewd? Don't answer. I mean, it's just a D, just one letter, but a shrew is a small mouse. A shrewd is somebody who lives their life with astute and highly trained powers of discernment. And Jesus, from the very beginning, understood the necessity for us to have the ability to discern between what is real and what is not real. In our world, we used to say, "Well, let me see it. Let me see it, and that'll be it." But I don't even know anymore. In fact, can I trust a picture? I saw a picture the other day of somebody who had a cloud and a snow cone. Well, was that real? Was that not? I had a friend who played college. There it is. Cloud and a snow cone. You think that's real? Well, a shrewd would be able to discern. had a friend the other day who called, former college football player. He said, you know, when they would take us into the film room, they say the video will never lie, but it will also never tell the whole truth. There is more going on, and we do seek to hone those skills of discernment. And it seems to be something that is of great importance and need for us today.
So, Jason, what are, with all the risks and all the challenges associated with a virtual world, what are some questions we should be asking ourselves as followers of Jesus? What are some questions that Christian parents should be asking themselves as followers of Jesus as well?
Well, I mean, we've been asking a lot of questions here this morning. You've been asking me some questions. You know, what are the risks that are out there? What are the dangers? And we tend to get kind of locked down there. I know when I was in middle school, there was a neighborhood over behind my middle school, Ollie Middle School, and the whole lunch table was, you don't go in that neighborhood, because if you go in that neighborhood, you might get stabbed, your shoes might get stolen. We understood there was a neighborhood that was dangerous. I mean, Mr. Parker understands, hey, there's a dangerous neighborhood over here, and he's not going to let his kids run around in that neighborhood. But more than the what's, or maybe the why. And I think the why questions are going to be the foundational questions that lead us into the future in as followers of Jesus. Now, why am I here? If I choose to leave this world right here, this physical world, and go into this neighborhood, this virtual neighborhood that's worldwide, well, why am I doing that? Why am I there? Is it just a habit? Is it just I see somebody pull out their phone and it triggered an action? I pulled out my phone. What's the purpose behind not being there? You know, I don't know if you read that there was a survey done of 1,000 millennials that had admitted that they lied on some social media platform. Did you hear that about that survey? 1,000 intentionally lied, and they want to know, well, why did you deceive? Why did you lie? You know what the number one answer was?
I think so.
You do?
I do. Make somebody jealous.
That's it. To make an ex jealous. You have read that, sir. To make an ex jealous. The number one reason that somebody, because you think about how that works.
But only for millennials.
That was just millennials. Nobody else would ever do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see how that, you know, you want them to see what they're missing out on. So, you know, you take a picture of yourself in front of the Ruth Chris Steakhouse sign, put a little tag on it, heading to dinner. Share with the world. And then, you know, what you don't share is you then got in your car, drove across the street to Wendy's, and had your $3.99 hamburger. And, you know, you want them to see what, so, you know, what are you doing? What am I doing? Why am I sharing this? Why am I posting this? Am I feeding the flesh? And I think Jesus gives us a foundational why for disciples those who have lived that, entered that repentant life, called to follow Jesus and hear his words in Matthew 28. Therefore, go into all the neighborhoods and make disciples. Hear that calling and understand that if I'm going to leave this world and go into that world, there's a purpose for my being there.
That when you go into the virtual world, do so on purpose.
Absolutely. I'm not just going to wander into a neighborhood. I wouldn't do that in my real life. I'm not going to do it in my other real life. That when I'm there, I am there with my tongue to praise my God and Father in heaven, to give him glory, to give him honor. And if he brings an opportunity to share with others the good news of God's salvation, that we do have incredible access to the world in ways that we really never had before. Can I tell you a story about one of my members?
Sure.
At Friendly Avenue in Greensboro? Rachel, her name's Rachel. She's probably the foremost leader in our congregation in being a virtual missionary. And she sits in her proverbial pajamas in a little town in North Carolina and interacts with people all over the world for the express purpose of teaching them about Jesus. People in the Philippines, people in the Muslim-majority countries, South America. The most amazing thing to me about Rachel, I've got a picture of her here, I think. I do. But anyway, there she is. Rachel is the gray-haired lady. She's 78 years old. 78 years old, and has given a portion of her life to interacting with people around the world for a purpose, for a reason. So what's the important question? Let's start with why. Why am I here? What is my purpose? And then we can go from there.
And so the essential message of what you're saying today, as digital disciples following Jesus in the mobile, social, and digital media age, is that first of all, in the virtual world, we still follow Jesus.
That's it.
We still follow Jesus. We still want to honor God and do unto others as we would have them do unto ourselves.
That's right.
And that we, rather than just screen addiction, to ask that overarching question, why am I here? Yeah. And to take that sense of mission and purpose into our virtual reality.
That's it. Absolutely. And I would add, with this prayer that Paul prayed for the Philippian church, mm-hmm. this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and in depth of insight, so that you may be able to discern what is best, and so that you may be pure as we seek to live and honor God in all of the worlds in which we will adventure.
Great. Jason, thank you so much.
All right, Ron.
Everybody, join me in expressing our appreciation to Jason Noble this morning. Fantastic. And I'm grateful that people actually around the world will have a chance through the internet to hear what you had to share this morning, because I think it's going to be really helpful and beneficial.